This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hour two of the Lombardi Line coming at you from coast to coast. Michael Lombardi out there in Jersey. I'm Stormy Bonatoni, live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. A great hour on tap coming up in about 30 minutes. Great friend of the show, Harry Gagnon, will join us, get some of his thoughts and plays on the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup Final, which is upon us. It's Why Not Wednesday, so we have some fun long shot props we're going to dive into at the end of the hour. But Michael, I want to start with a topic that has been top of mind for you over the last couple days. The Miami Dolphins, you wrote a full article about them this morning. What inspired the article and what's the road that we're going down here with Miami?
Well, what inspired it was when I saw Tua. Like, I mean, Tua played last year. He played in all 18 games. And, you know, at the end of the year, they did not play well. 2 years. I mean, they are, since week 13 of the season, the Miami Dolphins, under Mike McDaniel's direction, is 4-20. Since week 13 in both years. And so they faded, and they faded because they got a lot of guys hurt on defense. Bradley Chubb, Phillips, all their, I mean, they were a shell of themselves when they played Kansas City. But when you look at the end of the year, their offense wasn't very good. And then I saw the picture of Tua, and I just thought, you know, why would a guy who stayed healthy for the first time in his career change what he was doing? Like, what is he up to? And I've heard a lot of different reasons. I can't prove any of them. I didn't include any of them in the article, you know, off the field, what's going, none of that, right? So, but there's something there. And then when you peel back the layer about Miami and you say, okay, where can they duplicate the success that they had last year? Are they going to be able to dominate teams like they did last year? And you start looking at it, knowing they're going to pay Tua in the mid-50s per year, you realize that this team may be having the arrow pointed down. And I wanted to really get into why Vic Fangio left, because I think there's a couple things here that are going on, right? I think when you're the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, it's hard. It's a challenging job because Miami is a fun place for a young guy with a lot of money to live. Lots to do. And if you read the quotes by the players about Vic leaving, and if you read what I included in the article, what Ron Jaworski said, who's very close friends with Vic, is it was hard to have accountability under the Mike McDaniels scheme. Mike McDaniels is not really the head coach. He's the offensive coordinator who's in charge of the coaches. But he has no real involvement in special teams or the kicking game or actually defense. None, actually. This will be his third defensive coordinator in 3 years. Yep. So things are changing. So I wanted to kind of peel back that. And the Tua picture really sparked, as I said in the article, 1,000 words.
So let's go deeper in on Tua here real quickly, because for anybody who hasn't seen it yet, he showed up to a media event recently at minicamp yesterday as well, talking to reporters. And he is noticeably, like, significantly thinner than we saw him last year. He was listed as 6'1", 227. He looks sub 200, and it's not something that we're just noticing. His teammates are calling it out as well. Here's Tyreek Hill on Tua's new look.
Well, I ain't gonna lie, when I see Tua at the Pro Bowl, I was kind of scared. Dude was he was fat, he was chubby. I was like, hold on now. Bruh, hold on, bruh. Like, Ryan Clark said you were kind of thick. Now, he wasn't lying, but seeing him now and where he's come from and how skinny he has gotten, what's that stuff with everybody taking? Ozempic? He had to be taking that, bruh.
And Jalen Waddle today said, I miss chubby Tua. I didn't like it when I seen it. I told him I'm not bleeping with it. Eat some more or something. So I think what happened was, it got maybe a little too out of hand, right? Like last year, he really focused on the durability, being bigger, being stockier, being able to take some of those hits that he was taking because he had so many injury issues and concussions in the past. I think now he's turned the dial a little bit too far, and I understand wanting to be more agile and being able to be quicker and evade some of those tackles. But I think that it's gone too far. It's a little bit much. Whereas Lamar Jackson losing weight, you're like, man, this guy's already so fast, and he's shown that he can hold up a lot better now, and he can avoid those hits. I'm not sure it's the same situation for Tua losing this weight.
No, and we know this. Last year, everybody thought one more concussion, Tua was going to retire.
Correct.
I didn't include it in the article, but there was a whole offseason where if Tua got hit early in the year, he was contemplating retirement as it was. Now, we haven't heard that retirement talk. Of course, $50 million per year can keep you away from talking about retirement. There's no question. But I think the Tua pitcher started me down a road of investigating this team. And the fact that McDaniels is 4-10 over since week 13, 2 years in a row, the fact that the players embraced and celebrated Vic Fangio's departure, the fact that Anthony Weaver comes in with no real experience coaching the back end. They hired Joe Barry to help that. They named him run game coordinator, interesting. But if you look at what Anthony Weaver did in his first year as defensive coordinator of the Houston Texans, now they weren't very good. They were 30th in yards, 27th in points, 32nd in creating interceptions. Not good at all. The work's going to be challenging. You know, you can laugh about Vic being old school. You can laugh about Vic working him too hard. But Vic understands what it takes to be a good defense. Mm. And you can make fun of him all you want, but he's more right than the players are going to be right. And I just think to me that this is a situation why they're 4-10 is because their head coach is kind of going to be what we call a player's coach. Just let them do what they need to do. We'll outscore people. And then let's go back and look at it, right? So let's visit week 13 of this year. And you go back and see where they have. They start with the Packers. Cold weather game, Green Bay, November. Come home and play the Jets. All right. They go to Houston. The dome will be closed. No big deal. Play San Francisco at home. They end up with Cleveland, cold. I can promise you that. The Jets, cold. I can promise you that. And has anybody looked at Tua's numbers when it's 40 degrees or below? He's not good. He's not good. Like, they know it in Miami, he's not good. When this schedule came out, everybody in Miami, they'll never admit this, was worried because if they're in a race to go to Cleveland and to go to the Jets and they need both those wins, you could forget about it.
Yeah, lost four of their last six games down the stretch last year. And again, these are against good teams, too, that final however handful of weeks from week 13 on. And I've said this stat on the show before. I'm probably going to say it a number of other times before we get into the season. Against good teams. So we're talking teams 500 win percentage or better. I think that's fair to say. Tua had 22 touchdowns, win percentage or worse, excuse me, against bad teams. Tua had 22 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. The team as a whole averaged 35.5 points per game. Against teams that are over 500 win percentage, they were 1-6 in those games. Tua had 8 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, and the offense averaged just 16 points per game. So not only do you have, as you're talking about, cold weather teams, but good opponents that you're going to have down the stretch as well. That stretch is why they missed out on winning the division last year. I mean, the Packers, the Jets twice, the 49ers, the Texans, who we anticipate being really good, the Browns, who, yes, are a question mark, but on the road in prime time on Sunday Night Football in a tough place. Like, these are a lot of things that are important to keep in mind. So Miami's win total, 9.5. It is juiced to the over. So people are believing and buying in on this team that won 11 games last season. But just keep that in mind. Another thing I want to touch on here real quickly, Michael, because the Browns, who I just referenced, they evidently have given extensions to their head coach, Kevin Stefanski, and general manager, Andrew Berry. I don't know the terms or the length or the extent of it, but I find that a little bit interesting, given that Andrew Berry was there and responsible for the Deshaun Watson deal that could go down as one of the worst ever. So just give me your initial thoughts on this.
Well, I think the Haslam family is intimately involved, and so is Paul DePodesta. And I don't think that Andrew Berry drove that Deshaun Watson train all by himself. I think he was maybe the conductor, but he might have been a subconductor. I think there was more people on that than meets the eye. Paul DePodesta, Jimmy Haslam, D. Haslam, you know, all the other people involved in the family. And I think, look, Kevin Stefanski's won coach of the year 2 of the 3 years he's been a head coach in Cleveland. I don't know what they were. He's done a good job. They stripped him of his offensive play calling because they wanted to bring in a new play caller. They wanted him to go become a head coach. So I think what's happened is the Haslam family's very comfortable with the arrangement they have because they're involved. You know, they're involved in everything, and they want somebody to run their team. DePodesta runs the football with Barry, and Stefanski runs the team, and they can still be involved without really making them aware that they're involved. So it's the perfect setup, and when you have the perfect setup, usually extensions happen.
obviously won 11 games last year and went to the postseason where they lost to Houston in that first game. They've used five different quarterbacks throughout the course of the season. But I just keep coming back to two things about the Browns last year that throw me for a loop is the way their defense played at home versus the road and how dramatic of a difference that genuinely was. And the fact that they won all these games despite Deshaun Watson, like they actually were winning more games with him not on the field than with him on it, which is something that would concern me. Like, what version of Deshaun Watson are we going to be? Because if you're doing this, you're saying that, hey, Deshaun Watson, this is working out. This is a good thing.
And you owe him $120 million more guaranteed money, Stormy. I mean, you're not getting away from him. You're not getting away from him. This isn't like, okay, this is our last year. You owe him the money. It isn't the Russell Wilson. We don't want to keep paying the money. This is you're paying the money.
No doubt about it. Okay, I didn't leave us enough time for what's on Michael's mind. So if it's okay with you, can we push that after the break? Because I want to get your full thoughts on it.
Sure, that's no problem. Whatever we need to do, you know that. I mean, I think the other thing I want to go back to Miami for a quick second. I think really when you look at the good coordinators, I mean, last year against Philadelphia, I mean, this was blew me away. They had 12 first downs against Philly, right? They couldn't block Philly. They gained no yards. They had 10 penalties in the game, and they gained 244 yards. Like, at some point, when are we going to talk about the non-physicality of the Miami Dolphins offense?
I have a lot of questions about Miami, but quite frankly, I have a lot of questions about everybody in the AFC East, I feel like. Buffalo, what are we going to see from that team? What are we going to see from the Jets? What are we going to see from Miami? I don't know. We got to hit the break. When we come back, we will get to what's on Michael's mind, as well as the biggest threats to division champs in the NFC. You won't want to miss it.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Act now and save big for a limited time. We're giving our annual subscription to VSiN Pro at an unbeatable price, usually $240 a year. You can now subscribe for just $199, and we're throwing in an extra month for free. That's 13 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day. With VSiN Pro, you'll gain instant access to our daily best bets, real-time betting splits, exclusive betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video content. Don't miss out on this incredible offer. Head to vsin.com/subscribe now, but you need to use our promo code Lombardi. Again, promo code Lombardi. Claim your discount and bonus month at vsin.com/subscribe. Welcome back to VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. This is the Lombardi Line alongside Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni. I left you hanging there. We wanted to get to what's on Michael's mind, and I went long on Miami. I went long on the Cleveland Browns. So here is your moment, Michael. What is on your mind today? Let's do this.
Well, when I get up and I start reading the NFL news, I'm now inundated with a daily report of practice. You know, Drake May threw an interception. You know, Caleb Williams was brilliant in 7-on-7. Like, enough. Okay, I got it. We love football. We need it. But this is not the time to evaluate. There are no pads on. Darren Waller is going to the Hall of Fame this time of the year. He's incredible. He's incredible. He's fast. He's athletic. No one hits him. And so he's amazing. But this is a football game of contact. And it's a football game of physicality. And unless that's going on, let's not talk about great things. Let's just talk about, okay, here's what's happening. Here's who got some reps. And here's what I think we miss more than anything. And this what's mostly on my mind is we want the players to look crappy. We want them to look bad. They have to learn how to play football. Like, why do we think we have this Hollywood notion that a guy's going to walk into training camp and not turn the ball over? Drake May's coming in and he's going to be, you know, he's not throwing an incomplete pass. He's unbelievable. Like, we're not Hollywood script writers. Like, this isn't real. He's going to screw it up. He's going to look horrible. I mean, C.J. Stroud's first pass in the first preseason game, he held the ball for 2 seconds too long and threw it out like 20 minutes late into the dirt. Like, you know, I mean, it was horrible. But he got better. And that's because he made a lot of mistakes. Like, can we stop talking about bad mistakes. Mistakes are what we want this time of the year. So that's what's on my mind, Stormy.
Yeah, you got to work out the kinks. Better to make those mistakes on this stage than week 17 in a win and in the playoff game, right? So these are the times that you're supposed to be doing that. Who doesn't love a good 7-on-7 play-by-play Twitter thread, though, Michael? This is what we live for in the summer.
Yeah, exactly.
Great.
Yeah, it's 7-on-7, nobody. I mean, it's like we're Madden in the basement. Mom, more meatloaf. Come on. What is she doing in there?
I never know what she's doing back there. The meatloaf. Great, great stuff. What's on my mind a little bit here is, as per usual, the San Francisco 49ers. But I want to talk about the NFC here because earlier in the week, we went through the AFC reigning division champs and who's the biggest threat to them. We'll switch gears here to the NFC, and the 49ers in the NFC West are always top on my mind. They have won back-to-back division titles, 3 in the last 5 years. They're an odds-on -195 favorite to do it again. All 3 of those years, by the way, they won the division. They also played in the NFC title game or Super Bowl for those games. So it's a good indicator of how they're going to be in the postseason, it seems.
Yeah.
If not the 49ers, then who in the NFC West to you, or would you feel more comfortable laying it with San Francisco?
Well, I think the number's not that bad with San Francisco, but I would feel really good about laying it with the Rams at +330, but I think that number's been adjusted because you can't predict the health of Matthew Stafford. Mm. You just can't. I mean, he's a tough, tough guy, right? And I agree with C.J. Stroud said about him, that he's dynamic and he can make all the throws, but he is getting up there in age and he wants a new contract. And I think he sees this is his moment. And the market, we love talking about that market, mm-hmm. Stormy, the market is moving well against what he performed to. So I think that number, though, I think the Rams at +330, I think there's two factors in why that number is so rich. No Aaron Donald. And the potential of Stafford getting hurt, because it isn't going to be Stetson Bennett's going to come in and save the day. I think we're pretty clear on that, you know, and so I think that would end that. And, you know, look, they got Garoppolo there too, but Garoppolo is going to miss 2 games. Seattle, I like Seattle. I don't like them to overtake the Niners, but I do like Seattle at +700 in the West. I have a lot of people are high on the Cardinals. You know, Adam Burke was really high on the Cardinals and all they've done. And look, last year they weren't very good. And they kept themselves in a lot of games. I'm just not sure they really have improved that much.
I do think that they will be better. I don't think division winning caliber. Again, the 49ers -195, the Rams +330, Seattle Seahawks 7-1. How about the NFC South, the reigning champion Buccaneers? Tom Brady retires and the Bucs win the division anyways for a third straight year. The Falcons, who were 7-10 last year, who fired their coaching staff, bring in Raheem Morris, bring in Kirk Cousins, and they, according to the odds, are the biggest threat to Tampa in the driver's seat to win this division at -105. They were as high as -130. Should we be looking at the Bucs, Falcons, or elsewhere in the South?
Well, look, I think we should be looking at the Saints at +330, because the Saints, the last 4 games of the 5 games a year, they were 4-1. All right. They played Detroit in a good game back and forth, right? You know, they lost to Atlanta up there 24-15. That was an issue, but then they came back and they won 4 of the last 5. They only lost to the Rams in a good game. They got behind in that Thursday night game, and they couldn't. Carr was horrible, and then they come back and beat the Bucs convincingly. I mean, beat the Bucs convincingly, and then they beat Atlanta convincingly. Look, I think Rory McIlroy Carr, who is what I call him, because not Rory McIlroy, Ricky Fowler Carr. You know, when the pressure's not on, he's really good. Just like Ricky Fowler, when the pressure's not on Ricky, it's really good. So I'm hesitant to go all in on the Saints, but I think the Saints have a good team. And if they get that offensive line going a little bit, I think they're the best. Look, there's no great team in the South, including the Panthers. I mean, if they get anything going. So I would take the number here at +330. I mean, why are the Falcons even the favorite? What have they done? What have they improved one iota on defense? Has anybody paid any attention to any move they've made defensively? Like Kirk Cousins, it doesn't have a cape. He doesn't have a red cape. Somebody's got to play defense.
And that's a huge part of the reason why we were so critical and judgmental of them taking Michael Penix Jr. in that top 10 of the draft, because they need that help on defense. And it is so evident, but it is interesting. I like that that discussion point with the Saints, because I feel like they've been kind of on this island of misfit toys where all of the attention has been on the Falcons. And since the Bucs bring back Baker Mayfield and bring back Mike Evans, and they're the defending champs, that they're the other team, it seems like the top two and then everybody else. And no, the Saints are very much so in the mix in that division. In the North, the Lions, fresh off their first division title since 1993, when it was the NFC Central, baby. They made it all the way to the NFC title game. Should have won that game. Glad they didn't. Neither here nor there. Who is the biggest threat to Detroit in the NFC North right now? The odds as they sit: Lions plus 150, Packers plus 210, Bears plus 265, and Vikings way far off at 10 to 1.
I'm going to say the Packers because, you know, look, we had Simon Hunter on earlier this week, and he thinks they're a little bit overvalued, and can they continue? I just think they're going to be better defensively. I really do. I have better – I think with Halfley coming in to coach the defense, I think it gives them a chance to be a better team. And I think that'll be an improvement over Joe Barry and trying to play Tampa and do all that stuff that he wants to do. So I like them. You know, I can't tell you about the Bears. I know everybody's in love with the Bears' improvement defensively from the end of last year. And we know this about the Bears. They're going to be better, but they still haven't improved their offensive line. I mean, Ryan Poles just loves skill players. He's playing a 7-on-7 league. And that offensive line, I think, is going to still be the downfall of the team.
Yeah, Matt Eberflus talking this week about the importance of the connectivity with Caleb Williams in the offensive line. Significant work needs to be done on the cadence, at least where things sit right now. But obviously a whole lot of time before we get to actual meaningful games. Last but certainly not least, NFC East, the Cowboys, the reigning champ. No team has repeated in this division since the Eagles won four straight 20 years ago. Who's the biggest threat to the Cowboys? And is there anybody other than the Eagles to answer that question?
It's just the Eagles. I just don't understand how the Falcons are minus money and the Eagles are plus money. Like, jump all over the Eagles right now. Take it. Run with it. I mean, run with it as fast as you can. How are the Falcons minus money and the Eagles are plus? Come on, Stormy. This is a gift. This is a gift. I mean, first of all, everybody here in Philly have already given them the Super Bowl. I mean, my man John Clark over at NBC, you know, he interviewed me for my book. I mean, I kept saying, John, if you want me to tell you the Eagles are winning the Super Bowl, I'll tell you that. I mean, every question he asks me says that, right? If that's what you want, I mean, he's got them going there.
And hey, people have been making the bet because they were co-favorites with the Cowboys, both at plus 130 apiece. The Eagles are plus 115 right now. But you heard it here first. Michael Lombardi, run, don't walk to the counter and take the Eagles in the NFC East. As far as those Super Bowl odds go for your buddy, 17 to 1 where things sit right now for Philadelphia. We're going to hit the break. Coming up next, Harry Gagnon joins the show, how he's approaching the NBA Finals and the Stanley Cup Final. Harry and I are on the same page for this team to raise the cup this year. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
In addition to watching and listening to VSiN, don't forget about all the betting tools and content at VSiN.com. We've got best bets from all of our hosts, guests, and experts, betting splits, pro tips, and trends. And right now on the homepage, betting previews for both the NBA and Stanley Cup Finals. Whether you're looking for series plays and props or game-by-game breakdowns, we've got you covered on VSiN.com. Plus, as we discussed earlier this hour, Michael's got a new column live, why the Miami Dolphins should be concerned for 2024. The list ain't short, ladies and gentlemen, but you know who shouldn't be concerned? Our audience and everybody listening today, because we have the one and only Harry Gagnon joining us on the show here via the Progressive Guest Line. Harry, former Vegas sportsbook supervisor, termed better against all odds host and international world traveler. Harry, welcome back to the show. How are we doing, buddy?
What's up, guys? How's everything over there? You guys okay?
Better now that we have you on the show, my friend, of course.
Nice. Thank you. Nice.
All right, Michael, where do you want to start? You want to go NBA, NHL? Where you at?
Yeah, well, I just want to know where, you know, where's Waldo? Where's Harry? I mean, that's the main question, right? I mean, where the hell are you today, Harry? And when you're going back, are you on Bruce's flight going back, or what are you doing?
Right. You know what? No, I'm not on his flight back, but I am in Phoenix, guys. I'm in Phoenix. And by the way, I don't know if you guys have seen the a lot of sports going on right now. So I don't know if you've seen the weather report, but tomorrow, record highs here in Phoenix, supposed to be 115. It just turned June.
Wowee. Oh, man.
115. Going to be toasty in Vegas, I'm sure, then, too.
Yeah, but you guys always have it a good 5 to 10 degrees hotter than us. You know, cut, crack open that egg on the cement, ready to go. Get yourself an over-easy bad boy. Let's get into a little NBA conversation here. The finals upon us on Thursday. We heard from Kristaps Porzingis. The expectation is that he'll be available for Boston coming up in Game 1. General series feel right now. I feel like everybody that I'm talking to is putting money on the Mavericks, but they say the quote unquote sharp play, the pro bettors are on the Celtics. How do you feel?
Yeah, you know, this is going to be a fun series. I'm excited for it. I do think this is going to be very competitive. Unlike what happened with Boston, Boston and Indiana was competitive, but still 4-0 and the 4-1 the other way with Dallas. Minnesota just didn't show up after beating Denver, but I have a feeling this is going to go 7 games. You can get that at plus 200. Mavs are a 5 seed, but 8-2. We're definitely not playing like a 5 seed. They are 8-2 in their last 10. Boston very fortunate in their situation too. Kyrie going back to Boston's got a great angle for this game. It should be a lot of fun watching the fans go crazy in Boston. I think this is going to be a slugfest series. I think it goes 7. Top scorer, I like Jason Tatum at plus 260 for the series too. Maybe if there's some blowouts by Boston and Dallas rest of the players and Luka doesn't play in fourth quarters, if there's some blowouts, which we've seen in the past, I like Tatum at plus 260. But for game one, I do like the Celtics. I'm going to lay the points. 3-0 straight up in game ones this postseason. They've won those by an average of 17 points per game. They have been a little lazy at home, Boston, going through the motions, knowing how good they are, guys. But it's the finals time now. Boston fans, like I said, are going to be pumped up. The whole Kyrie thing. I think the Celtics make a statement in game one. In the second half, I think they're dominant. Tatum and Brown have solid games, as does the bench. I got the Celtics winning by 15, 118-103 in game one. And also, I do like Luka over 8.5 for a player prop. Over 8.5 boards at minus 130. He's had double-digit rebounds in 8 of his last 10 playoff games, 4 of his last 5 on the road. And Luka had 13 and a season-high 18 boards in the Mavs' 2 meetings versus Boston this year.
So you think we're going to go 7, and you think that Tatum – so does that mean you believe Tatum will be the MVP and you think it's worth betting him for that?
I do. You know, he was the MVP for the Eastern Conference all the way up until like halftime of the last game against Indiana. And then it flipped and Brown ended up winning it. Brown is 6-1, some places 7-1 for MVP. Tatum minus like $125. I know, like we just mentioned, that Brown won the Eastern Conference MVP. I think that flips here. I think Boston again wins in 7. But again, Boston, not that great at home, a lot better on the road. Haven't lost a road game in the playoffs. So I think Tatum's turn is now. He's the guy. A lot of pressure on Boston, a lot of pressure on him. I think he gets it done. I think he's top scorer. And I do like him at minus 125 to be MVP of the series.
Yeah, I think you can get as low as minus 115 as well, plus 260 for series high score. Sell me a little more on Boston for game one. The spread's sitting 6.5 right now. I was contemplating taking the Mavs in this one. Why do you lean Boston so heavy in this initial game Thursday?
Well, again, like I said, you know, in game ones, they've been great. Game two's not so well. I lost game two against Miami at home without Butler. And lost game two against Cleveland at home. But in game ones, again, they've been very good. I think they're going to be sharp. I think they'll be on the game. I know that the fans, again, are going to be all over Kyrie. It's going to be a situation where maybe Dallas plays a tough half, maybe even into the third. But I think, again, the bench of the Celtics, better bench than Dallas. I think overall here, they show what they're made of. They're the best team in the regular season. They've been really good also in the playoffs. Like I mentioned, game two is not so great, but still very solid in the playoffs. Took care of what they – listen, they. I know there was no Butler. Donovan Mitchell missed a couple games for Cleveland. Halliburton missed a couple for Indiana. Still, Boston got it done with pretty much ease along the way. Again, they've been the best team all year. I'm going to take the Boston Celtics to lay and lay in the points in game one. Game two might be a different story. Maybe that shows up because, again, I got this going 7 games, and you know, Boston has lost games at home, not played great at home. So I'll look to see what game two is after we see what happens in game one. But again, I like the Celtics. I'm going to lay the points here in game one.
You know, Harry, you're unlimited in your potential and reach in terms of what you can get to in betting. So let's just shift to the NHL, Stormy's favorite subject. Where are you going in this series? I know you seem to like the Panthers in the Stanley Cup final. Do you think it's seven? Do you think it's five? I mean, what's your instincts on this?
Well, I am going to lay the money, I believe, around a buck and a quarter on the Panthers for the series. I love their head coach, Paul Maurice. I think this guy is so underrated as a coach, not just in the NHL, but in the four major sports in general. He's a top three most underrated coach in all four sports combined. Edmonton, Michael, I know, has a great offense. They have great offensive players. But the Panthers were here in the finals last year. They learned from that against Las Vegas. They have a tremendous defense as well. Their defense is going to be the difference in this game. In 9 of the last 10 games, Bobrovsky, their goalie, has given up 2 goals or less for Florida. Florida dominated Edmonton in the regular season. I know it's only 2 games, but they beat them 10 to 4 in goals scored. I just love what Tkachuk has done for Hagee. Barkov, those guys have over 50 points combined in the playoffs. And again, I know the firepower is there for Edmonton, but it was a very odd game in terms of how they closed it out against the Stars the other night. Well, they had 10 total shots on goal, 10, and they pull it out 2-1. I just don't know if the defense has been tough against the Stars down the stretch here, but I think the Panthers' defense is a lot better than the Stars overall. And I think the Panthers, again, from last year being in the finals against Vegas, learned, and I got the Panthers at -125 to win the series.
I place the same bet, Harry, and I'm right there with you, especially when you talk about the way that they closed out, the Oilers did, that final game against the Dallas Stars. Like, for Stuart Skinner especially, that was probably the best game of his career, arguably. And now you're asking him to be even better to win a Stanley Cup final. Meanwhile, Sergei Bobrovsky on the other end just outdueled Igor Shesterkin, who's probably the best goaltender in the postseason this year. I love everything about the Panthers in this spot. I also love the experience, as you referenced, that they had from losing in 5 to the Golden Knights last year. And in that last year, they weren't healthy either. Like, Ekblad had the broken foot. Montour was beat up. Matthew Tkachuk with the sternum issue, he wasn't even available for that final game. So I think there's a lot of differences with this team. They learned from that. They're healthy. They're deep. They're balanced. I love the Panthers. I know that a lot of people are thinking about laying the game and a half with Florida. Do you think that that is a playable bet?
I'm sorry, one more time?
Laying the game and a half in the series?
I could see that definitely happening because the Oilers aren't getting the production like we said in what happened in game 6 against Dallas. They're not getting the production, and Florida is just shutting them down. And look, you can look at what Florida has done this year in the playoffs, but last year too, aside from, like you mentioned, the injuries that they had come Stanley Cup last year, look what they've done in the Eastern Conference last 2 years on the road in the playoffs. They have been unbelievable. I believe they are 12-2, 13-2 in their last 15 games on the road, if you don't include last year's Stanley Cup. This team, again, so dominant defensively. I think they can. If Edmonton can't get their offense rolling, it's going to be very hard for them to pull these games out because that's not the type of game. Edmonton likes playing games 5-3, 4-3, like that. And if they can't get that going, I like Florida to lay. And you can lay the 1.5 games with Florida because that's about it.
It's going to be a fun battle, no doubt about it. Harry, you're awesome. Thank you so much, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Harry.
Thanks, guys. Take care. See you. Have a good week.
Also, to further the point, since 2012, the betting underdog has only won the cup final twice. So favorites, baby, coming through. -125, -130 on the Florida Panthers. We'll be right back with a special edition of Why Not Wednesday.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're so close to crowning an NBA champ, and with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New to DraftKings, listen up. New customers get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just deposit at least $5, and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet if it doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VSIN. That's V-S-I-N. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Looking to find a few things to put it on. Harry Gagnon gave us some options last segment. He said he likes the NBA Finals series to go 7. He likes Boston in game 1. He likes everything humanly possible as it pertains to Jason Tatum as lead scorer, as MVP, all the things. So there you go. You have a few options. Michael, it is time as we round out the show for our pro tip of the day. We do these every day on the network. You can search them at VSIN.com. By show and by sport. But our guy Adam Burke joined us earlier in hour one and made a really good point as it pertains to the approach for Circa Survivor. He said, consider taking some risks on middling or weaker teams earlier on in Circa Survivor. I know we always love to take those quote unquote sure thing teams, right? But that way you'll have some strong options if you make it far later on in the year. Thoughts there?
Yeah, I do. I like to look. I think week one, you got to take the best sure thing. You want to keep the tournament going, right? You don't want to go out in week one. And I know that sometimes the sure thing in week one has left you stranded, but I think you got to get off to a good start. But then you got week two where you've had a chance to see some teams. I think Adam's right. You're going to have to make some tough calls. That's why I asked him, Stormy. I said, like, you know, how many games, like, if you do, to me, if you're doing this tournament, you should write down what your picks are. And, you know, and it's like playing Battleship. If you make it to the next week, what could have happened wrong for you if you would have gone in another direction? I mean, there was the guy, remember the guy that turned in the wrong team what do we call those people? The
proxy.
Proxy. Thank you, Elliot. The proxy turned in the wrong team and he thought he lost out. And his mother, who just passed away, saved him, right? I mean, so there's a little bit of fortune that has to come with it. I think to me, you got it. Every week's a chance. There's no easy one.
Yeah, the proxy says, what's your pick? Oh, what are you talking about? I thought I lost on the Packers. No, you didn't. Here, place your, let's make a decision here. Let's get you in. And he ends up living to tell the tale another day. Crazy, crazy stuff. But yes, I 100% agree. I think like you want to get through week one. But to your point, some of those quote unquote obvious sure thing picks have not worked out, but put everything into getting through week one and then go from there and start wheeling and dealing a little bit in the strategy game, because we don't fully know who's going to be the best or worst team right away. Like, I know that the Cardinals were a team that a lot of people were fading and it paid off for them early on, but like, they were really close and competitive in games, and you had a lot of scares early on in the season with the Arizona Cardinals. Okay.
Right. And I think the other thing is, too, though, before we get into why not, is there's no easy games. Like, it's not like college where you could take Vandy 1 week or you could take Duke. No disrespect to those programs. But to me, it's hard. Like, every game's hard.
It is. Survivor is the ultimate woulda, shoulda, coulda after the games are over. Like, oh, if only I would have taken the Texans in this game. Oh, if only I had the 49ers available. Like, the ultimate. Again, VSIN Pro Tips available at VSIN.com. But now it is time to wrap up the show like we do every single Wednesday. If we can talk Michael into saying why not.
Question. Maybe a stupid one, but I'm just spitballing here.
Can it make you say why not?
That wasn't a stupid question.
It's time for Why Not Wednesday.
I mean, why not?
You know when they say it's so crazy it just might work?
Okay, we got some long shots, we got some plus money props, but can we convince Michael Lombardi to tilt that head and say, why not? Let's place the wager. We're going to start with the Miami Dolphins. This is a team we have talked about a lot today. Can I convince you, Michael? Can you say why not? The Miami Dolphins to win the AFC this year. 11-1's the price.
No chance. No, because they're not built for cold weather. There's no chance. There was no way. I mean, that was like you, Bill Russell swatted that down the lane. You know, it's like when I try to ask Millie something and I know it's going to be a no. It's like got no chance, right? Like, there's no way that there's no way you're getting me to buy into Miami. I love their talent. I respect McDaniels as an offensive coach. I think the quarterback does a nice job, but they can't play in cold weather and they don't have really mental toughness. So there's no way you get me to do it.
Michael, we threw that one in exclusively for the content, and way to deliver once again, my friend. Okay. Let's go to Justin Jefferson here, who, of course, signed the massive deal at the start of this week. High expectations for him, not so much for the team. But what do you make of this 11-1 price for Justin Jefferson to lead the league this year in receiving yards? Could we get on board? Is it possible?
Look, he's got Addison on the other side. That helps him, right? But we're dealing with Sam Darnold and we're dealing with J.J. McCarthy. And somebody has to deliver the ball for the guy to have those numbers, right? And so I just don't think you – I would say no way here. You couldn't get me to play this one because I don't trust the quarterbacking play in Minnesota. I really don't. And I think, look, one of the things that helps Jefferson out is he has other receivers on the team that could eat some of the coverage, you know, where the, you know he's going to get doubled every single game, right? We know this. So you got Addison on the other side, but now you have Brandon Powell, right? I mean, you have who else? I mean, there's just Trent Sherfield, who they, you know, they got from Buffalo. I don't know. So you're not getting me to go there.
This next one, I want to say it would happen. I think it would mean very good things for the San Francisco 49ers if it did happen. And he has done it before in his career, but I don't think I can say why not. So here's a question to you, Michael. Could Christian McCaffrey, who himself just signed a new extension yesterday, go for 1,000-plus rushing and receiving yards in the regular season? It's a 12-1, so you're getting some bang for your buck here. Not enough for my taste. What do you think?
No, and I think the Niners would be stupid to do it. I think they got to save them and be fresh in the playoffs. And if you're getting 1,000 yards rushing and 1,000 yard receiving, your usage rate is up way too much. Mm-hmm. And usage rate for McCaffrey is really critical. You need him healthy. You need him well. That's why, to me, I keep harping on, if we're going to go to 18 games, limit plays. You'll keep the players fresher. The games down the stretch will mean more. So I think you have to really have a really good load management. There's that word that I love in the NBA. The load management count on McCaffrey, which I think keeps him out of having these two, having the 1,000 yards rushing and receiving.
That said, we did talk about this yesterday. Him as a receiving threat is an important element of his game, and his receiving yards prop set at 500.5 next year. The lean is over in that prop market. How about MVP? We talked a lot about CJ Stroud earlier in the show. He certainly thinks he's MVP caliber by the way he ranked himself in the top five active quarterbacks in the National Football League. Could you say why not to +850 on Stroud?
I could say why not. I mean, look, he's got a lot of momentum. He's very braggadocious. He's confident in his team. He thinks he's a top five player. If they win the AFC or if they're in the championship game, I know that doesn't count towards the voting, but if they have a 2, 3, or even a 1 seed, I think you're going to have to give him some strong consideration, no doubt.
Patty Mahomes, the favorite in the MVP market as expected, +475. You got Josh Allen and CJ Stroud there as co-second shots at +850. How about this? In the NBA, Luka Doncic, could you say why not to him averaging a triple-double in the NBA Finals? Again, another 12-1 price on Luka.
Oh, I'm all over this. This isn't even a why not. This isn't a question mark. Take it to the back. I mean, the guy rebounds as well as anybody, right? I love it. And he's a distributor. He gives the ball. I mean, we're watching a guy that's unbelievable in all facets of the game. And if he's guarding, let's say he's on Horford because that's in the game, or Porzingis, and they're trying to space the court out and he doesn't run to the 3-point, he's going to get a ton of rebounds. So I like Harry's 8.5 rebounds in game one. I love the triple-double one here. For it to average triple-double in the NBA Finals, absolutely. Count me in, Stormy.
He said, take it to the bank. One more here. Kyrie Irving, I know another player that you love because you are all in on this Dallas Mavericks team. Kyrie to be the Finals leading scorer. Our guy Harry already came on and said for him it's Tatum, but 10-1 on Kyrie.
Oh, I think Kyrie's going to play like a different Kyrie. I think there's a little bit more motivation in his mind, and you know, the spacing and the rest that he's going to get. You know, I think this is going to be, it would be pizza money here for me, because I do think Luka's going to lead the team in scoring, but I do think Kyrie's going to play well. It's always hard to predict where the ball is going to go, but it's going to go between one of these two guys. So why not sprinkle a little pizza money here?
But I like that, Michael, because that's the question I feel like with Kyrie in this series. Like, is he going to let the Boston factor get to him? I feel like based on what we've seen and him saying all the right things, the maturity has changed at this point in his career. And I don't think he'll be particularly phased by it.
No, I think he's going to play to win. I think winning, I mean, he's a mature guy now. I think he's going to, I mean, he obviously we all want to, I think he wants to do whatever it takes to win. And if that means scoring 30, score 30.
This show flew by today, Michael. Fun stuff.
Wow, it did, Stormy. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much.
We will be back here tomorrow, same time, same place, breaking down more OTAs and mandatory mini camps. But stick around, more football talk with Ross Tucker if you're watching on DraftKings Network. And Patrick Maher, if you watch the Lombardi Line, you know him well. Sharp Money coming up next.